Hello, this is Dave Jeffrey welcoming you once again to Optimal Life on the RPH Network. In the studio with me today is one of our regular readers, Lynn Perrott. Hi, Lynn.
Hello there, Dave.
You're well, fit and well?
Yes, I am, thank you.
Good. Now, you're a Novocastrian. What have you been up to there up in the north of Sydney?
Well, I thought I'd do something a little bit different this year, and I made some inquiries at the local hospital, John Hunter Hospital, and soon I'll be doing orientation to do some volunteer jobs there.
Good on you.
And I don't know quite what I'll be doing, but it'll be something interesting, something different from the previous year anyway.
You know, I spent a bit of time in hospital some years ago and the volunteers were just fantastic, even if you go around and just talk to the patients. And
I think
that.
It's
wonderful. Good on you for that.
That is something I could do, perhaps read some newspaper articles.
Hey, definitely. And also the John Hunter Hospital is very, very good. They've got a very good volunteering system up there. I've had a few bit to do with them.
Yes, my father was a patient there for a few weeks and he loved all the staff, you know.
Oh, good on you. Well done for that. Well, now, in today's program, we're going to look at estate planning and then how to survive cancer better with exercise and Mal Leyland's back on the road again. Remember the old Ask the Leyland Brothers, wasn't it?
Yes, that's true.
They were great, weren't they? Yeah. Okay, Lynn, what have we got first up?
Well, this article is entitled Survivor Enables Others to Get Active. It's by Phoebe Maloney. Three-time cancer survivor Suzanne Clark Petrolo is using her experience to improve the treatment and rehabilitation of others. After realising the benefits of doing exercise during chemotherapy and radiation therapy, she resolved to set up a gym for cancer sufferers and survivors that would turn nobody away. Miss Clark Petrolo's Caden Centre in Warrabrook, a Newcastle suburb, is a registered charity. Miss Clark Petrolo's Caden Centre in Warrabrook, a Newcastle suburb, is a registered charity and is now celebrating its first birthday. When I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2010, you were told to rest and just rest. Rebuilding from that was one heck of a journey, the Windella resident said. I used to say to the doctors, but what can I do for myself? Now they know there is something. Miss Clark Petrolo started undergoing treatment for third stage bowel cancer in 2012. During surgery, doctors found another cancer in her appendix, which triggered a third round of chemo and radiation therapy. In contrast to when she had breast cancer, Miss Clark Petrolo said she tried her best to exercise routinely, going for walks and lifting light weights, even though it was hard to know what to do. You felt like you were still alive, she said. It made you feel like less of a patient. Recent research suggests that exercise benefits most people both during and after cancer treatment and may reduce the likelihood of developing heart disease, which is more prevalent in cancer survivors than in the general population. The evidence is that doing some sort of exercise helps you complete your treatment and helps you manage the side effects like fatigue, nausea, muscle pain and muscle atrophy, Miss Clark Petrolo said. After being cleared of the disease, her younger sister suggested she create a place where these activities could be carried out. All exercise sessions at the Caden Centre are supported by a team of exercise physiologists and physiotherapists. The centre has insurance for high-risk clients, which Miss Clark Petrolo said most mainstream gyms do not have. Pretty quickly I realised it had to be a charity, so that everyone could afford to get this sort of treatment and care. It's too expensive for the majority of people, she said. A great aspect of the centre, the 62-year-old said, was that it brings people with similar experiences together. We have a lounge area and it's always full of people having a cup of tea and chatting. It's an incredibly happy place, she said. People come in and they've had a really bad day, but they know they've got a space to cry. They know the building is full of people who totally understand what they are going through. And that article was about the benefits of exercise, even if one is very ill, from the Newcastle Herald of April 2019.
We're going to look now at estate planning. The article is written by Noel Whittaker. He's the author of Making Money Made Simple. Most people now have the bulk of their life insurance through their superannuation fund. It's a highly cost-effective way to buy life insurance, but there can be huge implications along the way if good estate planning is not put into place at the outset. The problem is the tax on the proceeds of the insurance policy is left to a non-dependent. A good example is a young single with $300,000 of death cover. Got this through their work fund. They are unlikely to have tax dependents, so if they were killed in an accident, the tax office would take nearly $100,000. This would leave just $200,000 in the estate. Life insurance proceeds held within superannuation suffer a much higher tax than ordinary superannuation benefits. Why? It's because they are treated as untaxed. They are subject to a 30% tax, excluding Medicare levy, when paid to a non-dependent. Now, consider what may happen if the estate does not have the money to pay that tax. Think about Jim. He's a single father aged 50 with three adult children who all work. His youngest lives at home with him. Jim's house was worth about $380,000 in 2008. That's when his will was drafted. He has $300,000 in Superfund A and just $15,000 in Superfund B. There is also a $300,000 insurance policy on Superfund B. This is the fund that is paying the premiums because it has the smallest balance. Jim wanted his will to treat his children equally. Therefore, it was drafted to give the first child the proceeds of Fund A, the second child the proceeds of Fund B, and the residue of his estate to the third child, who was living at home. Jim figured out that would be the house and the contents. The children knew that their father had left them equal shares of his estate. But when Jim died unexpectedly, they got a terrible shock. They discovered they were not going to be treated equally at all. Jim had thought that his first child would receive around $255,000. This would be the proceeds from Fund A. He would be taxed at 15%, while the proceeds of Fund B policy would yield about $215,000 for his middle child. That was after the tax of about $100,000 was deducted. Well, there's problems here. Problem one, super funds do not deduct the death tax and send the balance to the estate. Rather, they send the entire amount to the estate, which then has to send the death tax to the tax office. Problem two, because the will gave the proceeds of Fund A to the first child and the proceeds of Fund B to the second child, they are entitled to the whole of the $300,000 and $315,000 respectively. The tax bill has to be paid, but not from the proceeds of either superfund. The executor of the estate pays $145,000 to the tax office, $45,000 on Fund A and approximately $100,000 on Fund B. Because children 1 and 2 have received specific bequests, the tax can only be paid out of the residue of the estate. Using a concept known as marshalling, the executor will probably have to sell the home to pay the $145,000. Not only has the third child become the cost of the tax payable on both superannuation payouts, but also the family home has been lost to pay the tax bill. All assets are not treated equally for taxation purposes. As the above example shows, failure to take death taxes properly into account can have disastrous and unforeseen consequences. And that article, Estate Planning, we said before, was written by Noel Whittaker, author of Making Money Made Simple. You're listening to Optimal Life on the RPH Network.
The next article is from the Senior Traveller, New South Wales, of January 27th, 2020. In Mal's Tracks We Follow. A legend of Australian TV, Mal Leyland, has been honoured with the Australian Geographic Society's 2019 Lifetime of Adventure Award. Lifetime Achievement Awards are the Society's highest honour, toasting recipients not only for their long commitment to their chosen field, but for giving back to the nation and inspiring countless other Australians. During the 1970s, millions got to know Mal and his late brother Mike through the hugely popular weekly series Ask the Leyland Brothers. In each episode, the brothers, along with their wives and kids, set off in their combi vans with a Super 8 camera to explore the countryside. It was Australia's first travel show, and its home video laid-back style was the complete opposite of today's televised travel shows with their diet of luxury resorts, spas and fancy restaurants. Where the brothers went was decided not by sponsors, but by the questions viewers wanted answered. Friend and fellow adventurer Dick Smith was among those inspired by their spirit of adventure. They did it all so inexpensively, spreading the message that anyone could do it, he said. Mal, 75, is still travelling, but without his beloved wife Lorraine, who died in 2018. After almost 50 years of marriage, most of it spent on the road, he misses her terribly. The combi of old is gone, traded in for the relative luxury of a motorhome, and many of the dusty roads he once travelled are now sealed bitumen. He sees more sophisticated vehicles on the roads, the sort that rarely break down. But he says the people are just the same, people with a thirst to see the country for themselves, who have a sense of curiosity. These days, his companion and navigator is often his daughter, Carmen, 42, the cute, tousle-haired toddler back in the early days of the series. At the time of writing, the pair were travelling from Adelaide to Darwin. Mal hopes a TV network may be encouraged to pick up another Leyland series, this time fronted by him and his daughter. In the meantime, he is doing regular segments on the morning talk show Studio 10 on Network 10 and is contemplating conducting tag-along tours where he would take a convoy of about 10 vehicles with him into the outback. Mal wants to see more Australians exploring their own backyard and believes travellers could be the saviours of many struggling drought-hit towns. While he doesn't begrudge his fellow Aussies their overseas holidays, for him it has always been Australia. Why would you want to go anywhere else? And that was about the inspiring life and times of Mal Leyland.
Thanks, Lynn. What an interesting article, and I guess we've all got a little bit of that desire in us, haven't we, to get out of the road?
I think so. I know I have. Oh, I love the way it started with that tune.
That's right.
Yes.
Oh, memorable music, wasn't it? I won't sing it for you. I won't. All right, now we're going to ask the important question, how do you know when to retire? And it says here it's one of the biggest decisions of our lives. This is taken from the Marketplace magazine. What does retirement look like for you? Do you have a plan for exploring new interests and learning new skills, catching up with old friends, making new ones, or travel? Might tie in with that article you just read, Lynn.
Indeed.
On the road. These are big considerations, so it's important to start planning early. Research shows that those who start planning at least 2 years before the big day have a much happier retirement. A large part of this decision is choosing where you'd like to live. Will you stay in the family home? Will you downsize to a retirement village? We gathered insights from retirees suggesting to take the following factors into account when weighing up your options. Now, there's about 7 or 8 of these. They've got lifestyle, maintenance, location, financial ideas, ongoing fees, family, safety, community, and facilities. So we'll go through them. First one's lifestyle. What lifestyle do you want in retirement? Do you imagine a community connected through shared facilities and social activities or isolation? The second consideration is maintenance. Do you want to renovate your family home or live somewhere smaller where there's less maintenance? Downsizing gives you time to follow your interests and hobbies or travel instead of mowing the lawn and keeping the large home in order. With less daily chores, you have more time to relax and do what you enjoy. Okay, let's look at the location. Our retirees unanimously advised location, location, location. Search for the right location, they said. Do you want to be close to the family? Near big hospitals? near parklands, or stay in the community that you love. Consider when additional care, if needed in the future, is located. Ideally, would it be close to you as independent living? All right, the social side of it. Would you like easy access to fellowship and friendships through social events, happy hours? Maybe choirs, craft, cards, and many more activities. Lifelong friends, this is a consideration as well, too. The financial side of it. Downsizing can give you finances to boost and free up your money for travelling, topping up your super, or even a new car. Then there's the subject of ongoing fees. How do you protect yourself against unknown fees? State government legislation protects you in retirement villages against fees being charged without your knowledge. Beware of retirement communities that do not offer you legislative protection against rising fees. The family is also a big consideration. How do you involve your family in your retirement? What will the family think? One lady said, "Our sons and daughters thinking of moving into a village is the best thing to happen to us. They think we're so much more alive now and we're really enjoying it." So it depends just where you'd like to go. Safety. Would you like to lock up and travel? A community where everyone looks out for each other? Or you can lock up and go away knowing your home is safe and secure. That's what most retirees are searching for. Now the community. Do you want to downsize to a block of units or be part of a community? A Harvard study has found that people who are socially connected with family and friends and community are happier. They're physically healthier. They live longer than those who are not as well connected. Ultimately, retirement is a personal choice. Take your time. Do lots of research. After all, the rest of your life depends on it. You're listening to the RPH Network.
Next, we have an article from the Prevention magazine of April-May 2019. Feed your brain. The science is in. The right foods can keep your memory sharp. Nutritionist and TV presenter Dr. Joanna McMillan has created a compendium of fuel-boosting recipes in her new book, Brain Food. Dr. McMillan states, "We are all pretty much accepting that what we choose to eat and drink affects our health. Much attention has been given to the factors that influence our heart health, gut health, and liver health. Yet we don't really talk about how food and lifestyle choices affect the brain. Perhaps it's because the brain remains elusive and slightly mystical to us. We are well aware that the brain doesn't always work so well as we get older, and you may also have noticed that your brain seems sparkier and works better on some days over others. The good news is that there is actually much you can do to improve the performance of your brain today and the health of your brain in the future. Scientific studies have illuminated many of the factors that count when it comes to looking after your brain. It needs the right nutrients and hydration to work at its best. It sounds a little dramatic to say your food choices can make you smarter and more creative, but they really can. Keeping up good eating and lifestyle habits over the years will help to slow the brain aging process, keeping your brain working better as you age. Here's just a few insights worth considering. Recent research about the impact of nuts shows that the combination of their different nutrients and plant chemicals can offer protection to brain cells, improve cognitive performance, and potentially play a role in slowing or even reversing cognitive decline with age or neurodegenerative disorders. A review of 44,000 people found that the more veggies people ate, the lower their risk of dementia and the slower their rate of cognitive decline as they aged. Large-scale studies show that regularly eating whole grains significantly reduces the risk of heart disease and stroke. Berries, cherries, and plums, with their deep red, blue, and purple colours, contain a wealth of polyphenols, protecting our brain from cognitive decline and maintaining brain health. and there's so much more. Now I've turned all of this science into recipes to inspire you, she said. Your lifestyle choices are just as important as what you put in your mouth. To keep your brain healthy, you need to get regular exercise, manage your stress levels, get enough good quality sleep, have a healthy social life where you have real human connections, and you need to challenge your brain throughout life to keep it stimulated. In my book, Brain Food, I bring you the latest research on how to maximise your brain performance and keep your brain healthy as you age. I outline the key foods to consume and the ones to avoid. And that article concerned how your memory can be kept sharp by, amongst other things, eating the right foods from the Prevention magazine of April-May 2019.
Thanks, Lynn. We're going to continue in the health vein now, and you've got one on healthy hearing.
That's right, Dave. This is from the Australian Women's Health Diary of 2019. The ability to hear enriches our lives in so many levels, yet when our hearing begins to deteriorate, it takes an average of 7 years for many of us to take action. Seek help early to make life more satisfying. Signs of hearing loss. Having to ask people to repeat themselves. Finding it difficult to follow conversations in a group setting. Being told by others that you have the TV or radio volume up too high. Missing phone calls, alarms or doorbells. Constant buzzing or ringing in your ears. Finding it challenging to detect sounds in noisy environments like shopping centres. How to protect your hearing. Reduce the impact of excessive noise, investing in good quality noise-cancelling headphones so you don't have to turn up the volume to drown out background noise. Distance yourself from loudspeakers at events, train stations, airports and gyms. If it's impossible to avoid loud noise when mowing the lawn or in the workplace, wear hearing protectors such as earmuffs or earplugs and take regular breaks. And now, onto a similar theme, bright eyes and how to keep them that way. Also from the Australian Women's Health Diary of 2019. The eyes are our window to the world, so treat them kindly and act immediately if you notice any changes in your vision. From the age of 40, you might notice your reading vision beginning to blur. This is known as presbyopia, and it is an abnormal part of aging. If left untreated, it can lead to eye strain, headaches, and tiredness. See an optometrist about getting glasses. Have 2 yearly eye examinations. Vision loss can be gradual, and some conditions like glaucoma can have no outward symptoms in the early stages. Stay active and maintain a healthy weight to reduce your risk of diabetes and high blood pressure. What has this got to do with your eyes? Well, both of these can increase your risk of developing an eye disease. Watch what you eat. The best foods for eye health are those high in lutein, L-U-T-E-I-N, and zeaxanthin, Z-E-A-X-A-N-T-H-I-N, which are believed to reduce your risk of developing eye diseases such as macular degeneration. Good sources include kale, eggs, and other dark leafy greens. Citrus fruits are high in vitamin C, vital for eye health. And nuts and oysters, nuts again, are good sources of zinc, which is believed to promote healthy vision. 3 common eye conditions. 1. Macular degeneration is the leading cause of vision loss in Australia. 1 in 7 Australians over 50 have some degree of this disease. I know my father did. In the early stages, it's hard to detect, so have your eyes tested every 2 years, or more often if you have concerns. 2. Cataracts are common eye conditions in the elderly, where the usually clear lens of the eye becomes cloudy. Symptoms include blurred vision, light sensitivity, and reduced night vision. Protecting your eyes from the sun and quitting smoking can help reduce your risk, while surgery to remove the cataracts may be needed if they develop. 3. Glaucoma. Yes, I know about this one. Glaucoma is a group of eye diseases where damage to the optic nerve results in vision loss. It generally develops over several years and runs in families. Around 1 in 50 Australians will develop glaucoma, and it's believed about 50% of people with glaucoma are unaware that they have the condition. Early detection is important, so treatment can begin before significant vision loss occurs.
Lynn, thanks very much for that. Most interesting. And that's as we get older, keep having health checks. That's the thing, isn't it?
I think that's so important. It's easy just to let things go and, I'll do it next year. But, yeah, get in and do it.
Exactly. Well, Lynn, that's all we've got time for today. Thank you very, very much. You've done the bulk of the work again, as usual. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dave. Be good to see you again.
I'll look forward to it. You have been listening to Optimal Life on the RPH Network. We would love to hear your comments on our program, so please feel free, give us a call anytime. Sydney, 9518 8811. Let us know what you'd like more of, or maybe less of, in our program. That number again, Sydney, 9518 8811. Thanks for being with us today. We look forward to your company again soon. Bye now.